Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry. Hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thank you very much for listening. If you have a second, I'd really appreciate it if you'd go on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave me a short review. It really helps to spread the word and keep this podcast alive. I'm at home now in the United States. Just got back about a week ago. Coming home is always fun. It's exciting to be here, see everyone I haven't seen in a long time. Katie and I flew directly from Delhi to Chicago this time. We had a long flight, but quite smooth and easy. And we're happy to be here for the next month or so. And hopefully I'm going to have a few more podcasts for you this summer. I've got a couple of plans to talk with some people in Minneapolis and Wisconsin. Stay tuned for all that, and thanks again for listening. Let's get to today's episode. My guest today is Pradipika Saraswat. She is from, well, she's from a little town in India, but currently lives in Delhi. And about 3 or 4 months ago, Katie and I were down in Hampi, one of our favorite parts of India, in the south. And Hampi has all kinds of ancient ruins in the area and really cool boulder landscapes. And one day we decided to go do a bicycle tour to learn more about some of these ruins and temples and stuff. And Pradipika was on our tour. She was on vacation from her home, and we really hit it off. She's a really interesting person. She's a journalist who, I guess you could say, has become obsessed with Kashmir. It's in the far north of her country, and it's a turbulent place with very interesting people and religion and politics and a lot of interesting stuff going on there, to say the least. She went and lived in Kashmir a couple of different times, as you'll hear during the show, and learned a lot about the place and met many wonderful people. She invited us to come stay with her at the end of our trip. So Katie and I traveled around and went up to Nepal for a month and a half and then back down to India for the last 3 weeks or so. And so the last place we went was Delhi, and we went and stayed with her and her sister. They were awesome hosts. We had a great time there. And literally about an hour before we left to go to the airport to fly home, we squeezed in some time to record this show. Pradipika is obviously very knowledgeable about Kashmir, having lived there and been a journalist there for quite a long time. I was also in Kashmir a couple of years ago, but only briefly, so I didn't learn all that much. And I was very happy to have talked with her. She was really interesting and taught me a lot about the region, and I'm sure you'll learn a lot too. So let's get into my conversation with Pradipika Saraswat. I just want to start out by saying thank you for having us over. This has been awesome.
You're most welcome. We loved having you guys over.
Oh, that's great to hear. How long did we meet? Did we meet? Like 2 months ago? 3 months ago?
Yeah, it's 2 months, I guess.
In Hampi?
Which month was it? I don't exactly remember.
This trip has been a bit of a blur in some ways for us. We're about to catch a plane in like a couple hours. We're flying home, and this is the end.
Yes.
Our last day.
How are you feeling about it?
I'm feeling pretty good. I'm excited to go home, actually.
But
at the same time, I'm gonna miss India.
Yeah, you're not going to miss India.
Yeah, I miss this travel life. It's what I do. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things that I could do with my life, but the thing I just love more than anything is exploring the world.
Yeah.
And
so what's your biggest takeaway from this trip?
Oh, wow. I don't think I've changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. Like when I traveled in South America, I think mm-hmm. I came back a different person.
Mm-hmm.
This trip wasn't quite that for me,
mm-hmm.
but it was, I'd say we saw such a huge variety of cultures and people. And the thing that travel always does for me is reinforces that people are just human beings. Wherever I go, there are definitely big differences.
Yeah.
And obviously India is nothing at all like the United States at first glance. But when I watch kids playing in the street, it's the same.
And right.
Like when I watch people interacting with each other, even adults,
mm-hmm.
A lot of it's just the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how much body language you can get by with just body language. And,
mm-hmm.
Katie even just sometimes laughs at certain situations where
uh-huh.
she sees a waitress say something or do something, has no idea what she said, but she completely knows what she said because uh-huh. 'cause humans are just human beings.
Right.
So I think that's our biggest takeaway.
Yeah.
I don't know. You were traveling in Hampi when we met.
Yes.
And what did you think of Hampi?
I had read about it in my textbook back in school, so it was nice to see those structures, those cities, like that city and those buildings. I mean, I could just imagine what it must have been years back, centuries back.
Yeah, so, do you remember how old it is?
Not exactly. I don't really remember the details our guide told us. I don't remember much of it, but it was really, I was in awe of those carvings and those buildings. I mean,
so many beautiful buildings.
Yes.
And the Ganesha statues.
And I felt really sad that we do not make such buildings anymore.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something been lost in that.
Yes.
Just the amount of effort it took.
Now we are making these ugly buildings.
Are you referring to just India or the whole world?
Because I have not been outside India, so I'll talk of India.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
So we meaning the Indians.
Yeah.
So Katie and I were like living in China, of course, and it's an architect's dream, a foreign architect's dream,
mm-hmm.
because they could just come in and make whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they end up making a lot of really weird looking buildings.
In China?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the government doesn't quite want that anymore.
Those buildings?
Well, they'll keep them up, but mm-hmm. they're like, hey, guys, can you just be normal for now? Like just build some nice tall buildings.
Yeah.
There's one in Beijing that they call the metal underpants.
Okay.
And it's two towers that are offset with this bar going across, and
mm-hmm.
I have to show you a picture. It's really hard to describe this building,
uh-huh.
but there's just a lot of these weird structures.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting though. There, in a way, it's this boom lately worldwide of architecture going back to building really tall structures.
But at the same time, you know, fine. Rich firms and government is making interesting buildings, and they're trying to, you know, come up with really interesting ideas and structures. But at the same time, we like normal people and middle class people and lower middle class people are making really awful buildings. You know, we don't even, you know, plaster the outside of the house.
Right.
I mean, it's really sad to see. Like, I love the kind of buildings or houses we have in our villages. You know, we make it with just with mud and some bricks and whatever is available naturally. So I find them much more beautiful than the kind of buildings we have around.
Yeah, these block housing. And,
So it's a sad thing.
Yeah, I agree. Much of the world is filled with this.
I really wonder why we are, you know, as we are progressing as a society, we are making bad buildings. Our taste is, you know, going bad.
Yeah, it's a great point. These cities, all these people are moving in the cities.
Yeah.
And it's not just India, it's all over.
It's all over the world, I'm sure.
Urbanization.
Yeah.
And people need housing.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, do you have to make it so ugly? Do you have to make it all look
Yeah,
identical?
they don't talk. They really, I think, they don't have the advantage to think about the looks and care about it. They
Yeah.
usually, I mean, they prefer to care about their comfort or whatever. I mean, get the best out of whatever resources they have.
Yeah. Right, I guess I can't judge too much
Yeah.
because it is a
Yeah.
money thing and resource
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Wow. What are the buildings like in Kashmir?
Oh, so again, in Kashmir also, I observed the same thing. So older buildings were made of bricks and wood, all of them beautiful buildings, red, bright colored, wooden and brick buildings. They were really beautiful. But now they are using again brick and mortar. Wood is going off the buildings. So
They're just running out of
these
wood.
buildings, some of them are really beautiful, but
Yeah.
I really love the older structure they still have in the, you know, downtown Srinagar and in some other cities. And like the older buildings are much more beautiful than the ones we have now. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't make them like they used to.
Sorry?
They don't make them like they used to. That's what
No,
we always say.
that it's changing. So now they are trying to make them like buildings we see in American and British films. So yeah, they're much more inspired by those bungalows, but the old traditional buildings are gone.
Really?
Yeah,
Oh.
yeah.
Huh. Yeah,
So
you.
in Kashmir, they put the most of their money in building houses and weddings.
And
So
weddings.
and weddings.
Oh,
So they
okay. So.
earn like their whole lives to just make a good house
Right.
and arrange for a fat wedding.
Okay, I think a friend of mine was saying when I was here a couple of years ago, not there, but in India. Was saying there's this term for the really rich people when they have their weddings, that there's a 1C and a 2C and a 3C, and it's like 1 crore, 2 crore, 3 crore
See,
wedding.
I'm sure
It's
it might be
insane.
like that.
So much money.
Yeah. Punjabis and Kashmiris, this man. But in Kashmir, this trend is slightly changing. Now these, you know, educated young people, they are preferring to have weddings without any money. I mean, you know, four people will go and get the bride, and they won't even have the feast or anything. They'll just have khajur, those dates and water, and they'll just bring the wife
Oh, just
and the bride
snacks.
back.
Okay.
Yeah, they're trying to, you know, change the trend.
Minimize it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Katie and I did something like that. We still
Yeah.
had a dinner,
I
but
would love to have such a wedding for
just real
myself.
simple.
Yeah.
Right, it's more about
You know, it's
being
more about two of
together.
you,
This is the
or
two of you, and
maybe the
it's,
two families at the
yeah,
mix.
it's the gathering
Why
of
involving
people.
everybody, the whole community, the whole town? Why do you need to do that?
And so much
Yeah,
money.
extravaganza.
Right, and so American weddings are probably not the same as Indian weddings, but with the
They
money
also spend
thing,
a lot of
a
money.
lot, yeah. With hiring a photographer and getting the right venue and getting the caterer to make all the perfect food and
Yeah.
the DJ
Yeah,
just playing the
same,
music.
almost the same, pretty much the same happens here.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think there's some backlash in the States too, a little bit.
Okay.
But what about, because India, there's so much more arranged marriage and families
Yeah,
putting
yeah.
weddings together. Is it like that in Muslim culture or Kashmir culture?
Yeah.
All
So
arranged.
again, they also, a lot of them. So they're like families arrange and the parents arrange, and in fact, because that's a Muslim society, so they prefer to marry their girls off in the family itself. You know, they can get married to their cousins, so they prefer
Ah,
that.
okay.
But if not that, they prefer to marry their daughters off in the same caste, though the caste is not really a thing for Muslims, but. It because of Indian culture and Indian societal structure, so they still have it.
Still
So,
exists.
yeah, so they try to marry off their children in their own community, and they choose it for their children.
Okay,
Yeah,
so
still.
kids don't really have a choice still.
Now they are fighting back. Some of them come up with their choices, and they convince their parents. Things are changing slightly, but it will take time.
Very slow.
Yeah.
What about dowries? Do those still exist?
So yeah, even in Kashmir, girls do have to take a lot of money, and not exactly money, gold, clothes,
Gold.
and things like shoes. These girls, you know, they start hoarding shoes and bags and pairs of clothes, far before their marriages.
Their
mothers start buying shawls for them, different kind of suits and dress material for them for their wedding, gold. So yeah, a lot of money they spend on these things.
Very much.
I'm not sure about the hard cash, how much money they pay to the groom's family.
Okay.
Like here in Western UP or Northern India.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it still happens a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
They do it.
This is something that doesn't exist anymore in Western culture, like in American
There's no
culture.
Dowry, there's no concept of dowry.
No, there's no dowry. But I think there used to be a concept of dowry.
Really?
Maybe 19th century.
Okay.
But starting maybe in the 20th century, roughly.
We are 2 centuries behind you.
Well, in that regard.
Yeah.
But like I said, we still spend so much.
So like, here, like my parents or in families like mine, so they would like to spend much money on their daughter's education and maybe healthcare and things like that. They would prefer to save that money for her dowry. Yeah, that's sad.
Really? Oh, right. Yeah. And I guess we should explain because people listening might not know what a dowry even is.
Okay, so dowry is the amount of money and goods and other household things you give to your daughter when you're marrying her off to a groom of your choice.
Uh-huh.
So that is like, it starts with lakhs of rupees and goes up to whatever money you can give.
Right. And lakhs would be 100,000.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You have to tell them.
I've learned
you
a few words.
You don't use this. Yeah.
No, we don't use this. I've picked
10
lakh
is 1 million.
Right. And then a crore is 10 million.
Yeah.
And so a lakh, let's see, a lakh of rupees would be like $1,500.
Probably. Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
And so starting there and going up.
Yeah.
And when I said one crore wedding, that's like $130,000.
Yeah. So weddings like that happen.
Yeah. That's so much money.
Yeah.
Huh. So what got you interested in Kashmir to begin with?
Oh, that's a slightly personal question, but I'll really love to talk about it.
Great.
So, yeah. So I went to this boarding school in my neighborhood. So we have this policy of migration. So we get students from non-Hindi speaking states and vice versa. So students from my school would be sent to a non-Hindi speaking state, and students from there would come to my school.
Okay.
So it's a like 1 year exchange program.
Right.
So we used to have students from Kashmir. So there's this district called Anantnag. From that district, students would come to my district, my school, which is in Hathras, Western UP. Okay.
UP being Uttar Pradesh.
Uttar Pradesh, yes. So these students would... So we were not sent there because of the conditions, militancy and the condition.
Oh, you weren't allowed to go to Kashmir?
Yeah, we were not allowed to go there. So we could not go, but we had these students from Kashmir in our school.
Okay.
And so they took special permission to stay over for another 4 years. So from 9th standard to 12th standard, they were with us, these students from Kashmir. So we made really good friends, and that's when these people were really different, you know, their ethnicity, their language, their culture was really different. They used to wear those farans. Farans is this loose robe that they wear in winters. So these things were really fascinating, especially I really was fascinated by all of that. And their looks, they were handsome, good looking people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be honest. So, but the thing was we were not really allowed to talk much with the boys. So,
okay.
So we could never really communicate much. So since then, I was always interested in Kashmir and its culture and its people. So after my school, I always wanted to go to Kashmir, but never got a chance. So I had my other things to do, my studies and other struggles and other things. I never got a chance to go to Kashmir. So after I joined media, after finishing my master's, I started working for media. So I was working as a journalist in Delhi, and then I was not really enjoying my job because, you know, it was a desk job, and what I had imagined as a journalism student that I would be going out working from this ground zero and reporting from there, but
sure.
I was not getting any such opportunity. So one fine day I really decided, like, no, this is not going to for me. I mean, I'll have to do something. So I put in my papers and I resigned.
Okay.
And I had to serve a month's notice period. So one fine day, like while I was serving my notice period, my managing editor asked me while we were having lunch at our office. So he was asking me, okay, where are you joining, Pratipika, after you're leaving us? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, sorry, I'm not joining anywhere. I want to travel. Okay, where are you going? And by then, I was not sure where exactly I wanted to go to. So there were two places on my mind. One, Kashmir, mm-hmm. because it was my long fascination, old fascination. So, and other place was Madhya Pradesh.
Oh, and where's that?
Madhya Pradesh is in the central part of India.
Okay.
And because I had initially worked in Madhya Pradesh for like 3 months. So we have so many, like two, three tribes there. So primitive kind of culture, primitive setups. So I was pretty much fascinated by that too. So these two places were on my mind. That either I'll go work in Madhya Pradesh, like study that culture further,
okay.
or maybe I'll just go to Kashmir and see what can I do from there. So these two things were the places were on my mind. So that's what I told my managing editor. He was like, "Who goes to Madhya Pradesh?" And I was like, "Yeah, I should go to Kashmir." And the same day, I came back home and I booked my tickets for Kashmir.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and then I finished my notice period and I went to buy a good rucksack and I packed it and I left for Kashmir after I was done with my notice.
You bought a what? A
good rucksack.
Oh, rucksack, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's just I took my camera, my laptop, and some pairs of clothes along, and I went to Kashmir. I was going there for the first time. I didn't know what exactly I'm going to do there. And
so you had no job then? At that
no,
point.
I had no job. Okay. I had no plans.
Yeah.
It's just I wanted to see what I'm going to do there. Mm. And this was my first time. And I took a train to Jammu. Then from Jammu, I took a taxi, a shared taxi, to Kashmir, Srinagar.
Okay.
And so in Srinagar, because I told you about my school connection, so I had one of my juniors living in a town, in a village close to Srinagar. So I had told him that I'll be coming there. So he offered me that I could stay with his family
okay.
for some time.
Yeah.
So I went there, stayed there for like 10 days.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I moved to Srinagar. I found a place there, rented it.
Yeah.
And I started living there, and I lived there for 5 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
What did you do?
So, yeah, just roaming around and talking to people. Mm-hmm. It was so beautiful that I didn't want to come back. So,
really?
But then, things changed. So, initially, when I went there, I was still exploring the city and the culture and other things. So, in 2 months, like Ramzan, this holy month of fasting was around the corner. People were really excited about it. So, I was also, really fascinated, to see them really excited about this festival, this whole month.
Yeah.
And they were cleaning their houses, preparing for fasting and all of that. But just after it, got over the month and Eid came, just like 2 days back here in India.
Sure.
So when Eid came in July 2016, so on 8th of July, and this like 2 days after Eid, this poster boy of Hizbul Mujahideen, this boy called Burhan Wani, he was killed. And it changed everything there. Kashmir was on the boil and everything changed. So suddenly, the peaceful scenario, I had never seen, the shutdowns and strikes and everything changed in a day, in a night. So the early, initial 1.5 months was different and the rest of the time was totally different for me.
Wow.
Yeah, so I started reporting from there. And writing.
Oh, did your old boss call you up or something and say, hey,
no, so I was not working for anyone, right?
Yeah.
I had no job. So I started working as a freelance reporter. I started writing to different media houses and I started sending them ideas. Okay, this is what I want to do from here. I'm here in Kashmir. I can go to these places and talk to people and write a report for you. So I started doing that. So
And they were perfectly willing to hire you freelance because...
Sorry?
like there's so much happening there at that time that they just needed some reports.
Up. So everybody was willing to take my reports. And
so what kind of reporting did you do? You talk to people and
sometimes videos, sometimes just text, pictures.
So
I was talking to people about different things, about things happening there, about these pellet guns and victims and whatever they wanted, what was happening to them.
Well, what was the mood like there after the assassination?
So, after this killing, everybody, you know, those who were okay with India, those who had not bad feelings, who didn't have bad feelings for India, started, you know, they went against Indian government, Indian forces, obviously, not against people, though. So they were angry, and this sentiment has been there forever, like
boiling up. Underneath the surface.
So even before Eid, before this thing happened, there was this sentiment that something is about to happen, something is going to... Because every summer, something happens there. Mm. Something boils up, something happens. Mm-hmm. So summers are usually not really... there's not much... there are strikes, there are protests, there are killings.
I guess... we should explain what Kashmir is, because I've been there. I just realized, like, I've been to Srinagar. I was actually there maybe a month before, or we probably overlapped a little bit, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was before this killing, so things were peaceful there. I liked it. It was nice.
Mm-hmm.
It was very different from the more Hindu areas of India.
Mm-hmm.
So, great trip for me.
Mm-hmm.
But... before I went there, all I really thought about with Kashmir was, I guess I was vaguely aware of the Pakistani conflicts that happened there and
mm-hmm.
the unrest that's always going on
mm-hmm.
there. But, and obviously Kashmir rugs or Kashmir wool was is the other word that I think of when I think of Kashmir. So
Pashmina.
Oh, yeah, I guess you call it Pashmina.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we in English, at least, we call it Kashmir, at least in the U.S.,
What do you call it?
Just Kashmir.
Oh, Kashmir.
We call it the same thing as...
the fabric?
We call the fabric the same name as the region.
Wow, that's interesting.
And nobody would know what Pashmina means.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised to learn it came from like the chin of a goat or something, or the belly of a goat.
I'm not sure, but yeah, it comes from a goat.
Yeah, I just wouldn't have thought that'd be
some special goats.
Mm.
Yeah, so
high
it's rare
goats,
and
I guess.
Really expensive.
Yeah. But do you know more about the history of Kashmir and how this ended up in the state that it's in, where it's like why it's in India? And
okay.
I don't really know this.
Okay. So it started with the partition. So we call it the unfinished agenda of partition.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So when British were leaving India, the undivided India, so they talked about this two nation theory on the basis of which this division happened. So Muslim majority places would go to Pakistan,
uh-huh.
and Hindu majority areas and states or princely states would go to India.
Okay.
So India was not really really organized back then. So there were really a lot of small kingdoms and princely states, and local princes were ruling them, and most of them were under British government. When India was divided,
mm-hmm.
It was divided in pretty much this East Pakistan, West Pakistan, and India.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
So two Pakistans and one India, and so there were two these princely states, Jammu and Kashmir and Hyderabad. So there were most of the heads of these states were asked to sign a letter of accession. Either with Pakistan or with India.
Oh, you have to join one of them.
Yeah,
okay.
You have to join one of these.
Mm-hmm.
So for the rest of the state, it was a little easier. Mm-hmm. They chose their sides. But when it came to these two states, Hyderabad and Jammu and Kashmir, things were a little complicated.
Uh-huh.
So in Jammu and Kashmir, the majority of the population was Muslim majority.
Uh-huh.
But their ruler was a Hindu.
Ah, okay.
And in Hyderabad, it was opposite. The population was Hindu predominantly, and the leader was a Muslim. So, but because Hyderabad was within the mainland India, so they were allowed this plebiscite. So they were told that people would choose which country they want to join.
Okay.
And they chose obviously India.
Yeah, wouldn't it make sense to be Pakistan because they're right in the middle of India?
Yeah, exactly. That's unthinkable.
Yeah, there'd be a Pakistan island right in the
Country. So that was already, there was so much difference between East Pakistan and West Pakistan,
right.
And there would be a third Pakistan within India. That's crazy.
Yeah, totally.
So, but with Jammu and Kashmir, it was a little more complicated because it was sharing borders with Pakistan, and population was Muslim majority, and but the leader was a Hindu.
Mm-hmm.
So Maharaja Gulab Singh probably was the name. Hari Singh. Maharaja Hari Singh was the leader.
Okay.
He did not want to choose either India or Pakistan.
Hmm.
He wanted to remain independent. So he did not sign any letter of accession neither with India nor with Pakistan. So for some time till October, it remained the same, like they were not with anyone.
This is like 1948 or
1947.
It's 47.
Okay. Yeah, 47. So till October, nothing happened. But then in October there was this Kabayli attack. So people from, we call it Kabayli attack. People from these tribal areas of Pakistan attacked Kashmir, Jammu and Kashmir.
Okay.
They crossed the border and there were a lot of massacre, a lot of killings. You know, they burned places. A lot of cruelty, a lot of violence happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they were coming closer to Srinagar. They wanted to capture it. And they say it was supported by Pakistani army. But then I still wonder how it was. I was just reading a book about it. Because Pakistan was a nascent, you know, state, newly born state.
Yeah.
And how could Pakistan really possibly planned it so soon? But they did. It happened. So this guy... ruler, the Maharaja Hari Singh, he called India for help. Like they wanted military help to protect their kingdom. So, but then there was this Lord Mountbatten, I guess, back then.
A what?
Lord Mountbatten, the last Viceroy of India.
Okay.
So he he suggested Nehru. Nehru, our first prime minister, India's first prime minister, suggested Nehru that you should not offer them help unless he signs this letter of accession, yeah. Obviously.
Sure.
Yeah, so he did sign.
So he was pretty much
forced. But then it was not really the same that was with all of us, like all other states. So India was supposed to get just three... India was supposed to control the external affairs and communication. And one more thing, I'm forgetting. So these three things were supposed to be taken care of by India. Rest, this place had autonomy.
Okay. Yeah.
So the head of the state would be prime minister. They would have their own constitution, their own law. Mm-hmm. And there was this Article 377. So they were like, they had some autonomy, Jammu and Kashmir, and they still have it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, still do.
And they were promised... Nehru promised a plebiscite there also, that
which means
people
country?
Will choose.
Oh, right. They get to vote.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Pakistan raised the question that, like in Hyderabad, you allowed people to choose because they were Hindus. Now they are Muslim. You're not allowing them to choose. So Nehru promised that there would be a plebiscite, and they can choose their country.
Okay, so they could choose Pakistan, India, or independence?
Probably. I'm not sure about that. It was about like just Pakistan or India.
Okay.
So it's not about independence.
Yeah.
So that happened back then. But after this Kabayli attack, a lot of a good part of Pakistan, Jammu and Kashmir, erstwhile Jammu and Kashmir, went to Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And then
they took over a bunch of territory.
Yeah, so the Kashmir was divided into two, Pakistan-occupied Kashmir and Indian-occupied Kashmir.
Mm.
So we call it Indian administrative Kashmir, administrated Kashmir.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Sounds nicer.
Yeah. So then, the new border that came up is called as line of control.
All right.
Yeah. And the rest of it is international border, and then the border that changed in after this war, Kabylie war, mm-hmm. is then Indian military came down and they took, like, they sent them back. What happened? And,
okay.
Yeah. So there is this divide. Kashmir's still divided.
Yeah.
Some part of it is with Pakistan, some part of it is with us in India, and later Pakistan gave some part of it to China, Aksai Chin, and Aksai Chin is a part where the 3-4 valleys are there, Aksgam and Shaksgam, and some 2-3 more valleys that is with China.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, so it's really complicated now.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
well, I've noticed
so now the problem is Kashmiris want this plebiscite to happen, they want their, you know, right to choose.
Oh, they're still trying to get this.
Yeah, they still want it.
And what do you think they want?
Oh, that's a really difficult question. So, there are so many sides, and there are these separatists, and even separatists have this factions. These factions. So one of the faction of separatists want to merge Kashmir with Pakistan. One want just independent Kashmir, including the Kashmir that Pakistan has. So they want to merge it back and have an independent state. So it's really, I don't know. I mean, nobody knows how it's going to, you know, how this problem is going to be solved.
So for now, you've got status quo as they're part of India. Most of it is, anyway.
Sorry?
Most, like right now, so most of Kashmir is in India. Some of it's in Pakistan.
But, yeah, a lot of it is in India, but Pakistan also occupies a good piece of it. Oh.
And the people on both sides.
But you know, it's really funny that we when we make our map, mm-hmm. we still show the part that Pakistan has in our map.
Ah, that's what I was gonna say before. Depending on what the map maker favors, you might see India being a lot larger or smaller.
Yeah.
I forget what Google
does. When I went to
Kashmir
for the first time and I wanted to see exactly what part we have, what part Pakistan, I was surprised.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. I had an idea that a lot of part is with Pakistan, a lot of part of Kashmir and Jammu and Kashmir is with Pakistan, but then not exactly how much, I was not sure. But then when I really saw it and I was like really sad.
No,
I shouldn't be sad. I mean, it's people and states, I don't know. I don't know what to feel about it.
So I forget. Do you know what Google does? Do they draw the border more or less where it is now?
Mm-hmm.
Google Maps.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if it's when you go on. I'll have to do this after the podcast, but go on Google Maps.com or whatever, mm-hmm. and just see what Kashmir looks like, which country they list it as.
Because
I don't know. It depends on which map you look at.
Yeah, exactly. If you Google it from here, it would be different. If you Google it from Pakistan, it would be different. From the
really?
US, it would be different, I'm sure.
Oh, even within Google. Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I've been to a few countries like this where depending, like when you're in that country, the map looks completely different than when you're out of the country. So Venezuela is an example of that.
Yeah.
They claim a ton of territory that's...
So you remember the book I was reading, the book like was The Dragon on Your Doorstep?
Yeah.
So it was more about China's part in solving or in maybe worsening this Kashmir conflict.
Oh, really?
So now China is also becoming a party to it.
Wow.
Yeah. So they were like, recently China offered that SCO Shanghai, what corporation would this SEO should step in to solve this problem with India and Pakistan and Kashmir.
Who is SC?
Shanghai, some corporation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm forgetting the...
That they would arbitrate some sort of deal?
Yeah.
I'm wondering about...
Shanghai Cooperation Organization.
Oh, Shanghai. Okay. Mm. I see. That'll be interesting. Huh. I was completely unaware of this.
Yeah.
Wow.
In fact, I am also just trying to read more about it.
Yeah. Is the Chinese part even populated? I mean, are there a lot of people
there?
No.
That's not really populated. I think that's pretty much barren.
That just sounds like the Himalayas and some valleys.
Valleys. Shaksgam Valley and two the other valleys.
Ah, okay.
So it's not really populated.
So it's not that important then, right?
But I'm not sure because, you know, China is building its infrastructure along the border of Pakistan and Kashmir. And there is so much influence on Leh-Ladakh part. So things are changing.
Oh, are they opening
so
up
So, you see, I'll tell you something very interesting, which I observed and I really found it, I mean, I was shocked. So, when you go to Kashmir or like Srinagar, downtown Srinagar, you just see like Pakistan's in the Jindabad or Go Back in Go India, Go Back. You must have seen those slogans written over.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
In Srinagar, right?
So,
but then once outside shopfront, I see like China. Where is it coming from? Even China. And I know people are really talking about it. I mean, that's surprising.
So they're involved too.
Yeah. Huh. And yes, Kashmiri people, like citizen, they are pretty much, they're politically opinionated. Much more than we people are.
Right. Even me just walking around. Mm-hmm. I mean, forget politics. I just wanted to walk around Srinagar, maybe sit down and look at the lake. Mm-hmm. And I've never had anywhere where the people were so eager to talk to me. Just mm-hmm. people were coming up constantly and saying hi. And
yeah.
I mean, sometimes they wanted to sell me weed or like sell me something, but the majority of the time they just wanted to
they
say
just
hi
to
and
strike a conversation.
Yeah, strike a conversation. Mm-hmm. It's truly amazing. Very different than like East Asia, mm-hmm. where people are much more standoffish.
Mm-hmm. No, Kashmiris are tourist friendly people and they're really warm people, they are warm and very welcoming.
It seemed like that. I was only there a few days, I guess, but
no, I spent like good time there.
Yeah,
and even though I'm from India and there are a lot of problems with India and Kashmir, but then they loved me there. I mean, I had really good time, though there were some bad experiences too, but then most of it was really good.
Well, like what bad experiences do you mean?
Once I had to leave my house where I was living because just people, but I understand that, you know, people were really,
they don't trust an outsider.
Yeah. It's difficult for them to trust an outsider living there. So the thing was like people were coming, people had started to, because I had made enough local contacts. So people, you know, used to come and visit me, local people, girls, boys, they used to come visit me. So, you know, one of them just got suspicious about me and wrote to my landlord. And one fine morning, my landlord came knocking at my door and told me there is some. He was pretty generous and a good person. He just told me there's some problem. And I was like, what is it? Okay, I can't tell you. Can you just make me talk to the person who brought you here, your local friend? Sure, I'll do that. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? Yeah. But I called this friend of mine. He was not in the town, but they talked over phone. And then the friend of mine, he told me, okay, somebody has written to your landlord and they have problem that you're living there. You're alone, an Indian girl. You might be working for some agency or something. Mm. So I was like, that was a difficult day. It was really cold and my friends were not around. I had to look for another house and I just dumped all my stuff to that house. And I was like really depressed and sad. I just left Kashmir the same day. And I was I'm not coming back. And I was depressed after this for a good time.
This was your last day in Kashmir then?
No.
Or you did come back?
I came back.
Yeah.
Spent 2 days, two months in Delhi and to Banaras just to heal myself.
Oh, okay.
And then I went back.
I see. That really sucks.
Yeah.
There's, you really want to be secure in your own home.
Yeah.
And when you don't even have that then.
Because, you know, I have so much love for that culture, those people.
Uh-huh.
And when I got that kind of response from there, from one of them or a few of them, it was disheartening. So yeah, I felt bad.
That's too bad.
Mm.
Right. What you said, you had so many good experiences too.
Yeah.
We can talk about those.
I would love to talk about those.
So
I made like good friends, like a lot of friends there. So I just used to talk to strangers and it was like I could trust them. I felt safe there. So despite, you know, people here back in Delhi and in India, they think, you know, it's really, you know, dangerous for a single woman living there. But no, it's not. I mean, I sometimes feel insecure or unsafe here in Delhi, but I never felt that in Srinagar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I could walk in any house, go to any, like, a stranger. Like, I could just make friends with a stranger and go to his house, and I would feel totally safe. I would know that no harm is going to come to me. So, there was this guy who was following me on Instagram. So I don't know how come he was following me or what was the thing. So I was just talking to him over, like, on Instagram. And I just told him that I want to see his part of Kashmir. Like, he was from Kupwara.
Okay.
Kupwara is a district in Kashmir. So he was like, okay, come down, I'll show you around. Okay, so one morning I went to Kupwara. He and two of his friends, the three of us went for a small trek, so some 8 kilometers up and then down, came back. It was a really good experience, and it was like, it got really late and dark, and then I was not even wearing proper shoes. I was wearing my leather shoes because I was not I didn't know that I was going for a trip.
Oh, you weren't really prepared.
Yeah,
for
I was not prepared
it.
For it, but then it was a good experience then, and my leather shoes were, you know, full of mud and water. I was soaked, and I had no clothes to change, and I had to travel a lot, travel for 2-3 hours to go back to where I was staying. So this one, you know, welcomed me to his place and made me meet his mother, his family, and they took really good care of me. They offered me food, shelter, clothes, and this lady, his old mother, she made me sleep, and when I woke up in the morning around 9 or 10, so I, you know, my socks, he cleaned my socks and put them next to me. My shoes were all clean. I was like, oh my gosh, they're so good. I'm so lovely people. So that was such a wonderful experience. Nobody would do that for me here in India, in Delhi.
Well, maybe you say that, but you're hosting Katie and me. And you're, I guess you didn't clothe us. And you didn't
come
wash
on,
your
I did
clothes.
Not wash your clothes.
But you cooked for us.
Come on.
Which is amazing. I never expected that.
Thank you.
I mean, just...
So, maybe I've learned this from Kashmir.
Maybe, but whatever it is, you've given us some wonderful hospitality. And
I'm glad you liked it.
Thanks so much. We found this in many places we've traveled, though. The people are so friendly and willing and able to invite us in, so... I'm actually looking forward to living in Hong Kong soon, and having people come over.
Yeah.
So we can pay it forward a little bit, or pay it back, I guess, since we've had so many people help us.
Not necessarily you need to pay back to once you get things from, or you get...
the same person.
Yeah, you can always do it for others.
It's just good karma, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely. But that's one thing, I guess you asked me earlier on about lessons learned traveling, but that's... That's a big one, that under that same umbrella, people are just people, and people are nice. They're friendly all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you have some here and there, some bad experiences.
But then it doesn't dishearten you for a long time.
Yeah, that's good. That's good if you can get over it.
Yeah. You need to.
Yeah.
For your own good.
Yeah. So when you talk to people, were you recording their... conversations and sending it in, or were
you doing
reporting on them, or
sometimes I was recording their conversations, recording them on camera. Sometimes I was just talking to them. Whatever they are comfortable with.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Some people are not really comfortable with these gadgets and recordings, and they were
definitely.
Don't take me off on camera. Don't take me on you know, audio recorder.
Yeah, and that's understandable too, especially in a
place like that.
Yeah, in a place like that.
In a conflict zone.
Where you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yes.
Mm. Wow. So, now was this all in English? You're speaking in English to them?
No, mostly in Urdu or Hindi.
Oh, okay. So they can speak Hindi too?
Yeah,
they do speak.
They never call it Hindi. They call it Urdu. So Hindi and Urdu are almost same when you just speak it. Their script is different.
Okay.
So the most of them do speak. Older people, some of the older people do not speak either Hindi, Urdu, or English. They just speak Kashmiri, their local tongue.
Oh, they have their own language. It's
Kashmiri.
Totally different.
Yeah, it's totally different.
And so Urdu comes from Pakistan, is that right?
Sorry?
Urdu is Pakistani?
No,
or
Urdu has originated in India.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
yet another language from India. Yeah. There's so many here.
Yeah. So it's pretty much the same like Hindi, but it has more Persian and Arabic words, mostly Persian words.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, more Persian words.
All right. But
Persian was our, you know, state language for a long time.
Persian was?
Yes.
Oh. In which state? Do you mean in India?
Yeah, in India.
Oh, wow. I'm learning all kinds of things here. Okay, so you could communicate pretty easily then because you're...
Yeah.
You so have two languages to speak in. Mm. Oh, all right. And so for the newspaper now, was that English too?
So I was writing in both the languages for English websites, for him. Mostly I was writing for digital.
You were freelancing. So
so I was freelancing for both the languages, like English and Hindi.
Okay, I guess I'm just asking this because maybe I can find some of your dispatches, if possible, and look at them and link them up to this podcast.
Yeah, definitely. You can find my reports for The Quint, and most of them are in English.
Oh, perfect. Okay, because obviously I don't speak Hindi.
Yeah, obviously. So, yeah, but there are English ones available.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you left Kashmir after like 5 months?
So this was my first visit to Kashmir.
Oh, your first visit was 5 months?
Yes, my maiden visit was for 5 months.
So
I came back around, like, in which month? August, I guess. August, 17th of August, I came back. Because I wanted to see how, like, what happens on India's and Pakistan's Independence Day. What happens there?
So that's like in August?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so like 14th
August is
then.
Their Independence Day, 15th is ours.
So you stayed until that day and then you came
so
back.
I had, so, before Burhan happened, I had already booked my tickets for this time. So I had pretty much no choice. So I could have changed, but I wanted to stay back and see. Yeah. So I was there, so yeah.
So what were those days like?
Mostly curfew.
Curfew?
Yes.
Not celebrations?
Yes. Though, yeah, in some parts there were celebrations. They were celebrating for Pakistan.
Oh, really?
Yes, they do it.
Oh, okay.
They unfurl Pakistani flag, sing their national anthem, it, and put it on social media.
Okay, so a lot of people are really wanting to be Pakistani.
No. Again, it's tricky. So they do it more so because they want to annoy India.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess that's understandable.
Yeah.
And so for India's independence, is that a huge... party throughout India, the rest of India?
Yeah, so Indian Independence Day would be celebrated in Kashmir only in government offices, government schools, army schools, army posts, and whatever, wherever army and these forces are, just that.
Oh, well, but what about, let's say I'm in Delhi on that day,
what's going on? There would be this Independence Day parade, and there would be celebration in every school and every government office, so like that.
Okay. Is there still like a lot of resentment against the British within India, or is that pretty much gone?
I think, no, it's still, I think they follow the same thing, probably.
They follow the same thing?
What, I think... I don't know exactly what it is like when Britishers were here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really feel it here, that any sort of anti-colonial sentiment.
This is really funny. So we really hate Pakistanis. Our politicians make us hate Pakistanis.
Sure, yeah.
But they ruled us for 200 years. Mm-hmm. We don't really hate them. I don't know why.
Yeah, this
we
is...
We're still fascinated by them.
Okay, you're just interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what sucks, is there's conflicts all over that are two governments fighting and the people don't necessarily hate each other.
You know, yeah, we don't. So you connect with a Pakistani, like being an Indian, if I connect with a Pakistani over social media, we would really love each other. We would love talking to each other at length.
Yeah.
They would be really courteous, really nice and gentle to us. We would do the same to them.
Right.
But when it comes to, again, it's not the same for everyone. There are, you know, certain nationalist people, they would not feel the same.
Yeah, well, obviously.
But individually, probably, they might feel the same, but collectively, no, it's not the same.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be some people who think against
because there is a lot of standard. Pakistan bashing over social media.
Oh, there is in India?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a little scary when you have two nuclear powers who are bashing on social media or fighting. I can think of some other nuclear powers that do that too. Hopefully things stay intact though.
I don't think anything bad is going to happen. They're just going to use it politically. That's it. Nothing really. I don't foresee anything bad happening to us. No more wars.
God, let's hope not. So you said you came here back to Delhi or wherever and then went back to Kashmir again?
I did.
So what happened there?
So it was my birthday in November, and 8th of November they announced this demonetization.
I remember reading about that. Where they got rid of some of the money?
Yeah, some currency.
Maybe you can explain that.
Yeah, so 8th November, was it 16 probably? Yes, it was 16 only, 2016.
Yeah, it was, because I remember it was about 6 months after
again,
I left.
So again, like I told you, so I came back here, I was in Delhi, and I wanted to see autumn in Kashmir. So when, during autumn, all these chenar, maple leaves, they turn crimson, and it's really cool. Beautiful there. So I wanted to experience that in Kashmir, because we don't have maple trees here in India.
Not in this climate. No.
Yes, so I wanted to go there. So I had planned, 9th I have my birthday, 10th morning I'm flying to Srinagar.
Okay.
So, but 8th in the night, we have this announcement. Okay, Mitro means friends. We are not going to use that currency anymore. And there would be new currency coming in for 2 days. You won't be able to use your banks. Okay, this and that. So I was like, I had no money with me. I had no money on me. So actually during those days, I had, applied for my phone to convert into to port it from one telecommunication company to another.
Okay.
So my phone was not working. So there was no OTP or anything coming. So I could not do any online transactions either.
Oh, and you don't have cash.
Yeah, I had no cash. And I was like, my mood was really ruined, and it was pretty much the same for everyone, because it was such a sudden change and government was not really prepared for it. People had to form long queues and stay there for money to come in. A lot of things changed during those days.
So what I understood is they just all of a sudden said, okay, the 1,000 rupee note is no longer valid, and the 500 is no longer valid. But then they didn't prepare and put enough money into ATMs. Even in the best of times in some parts of India,
ATMs wouldn't be working.
It's really hard to find a working ATM with money in it.
Happens a lot. Very difficult. Even happened now, to me either.
I can't imagine that. It must have been pure chaos. So what did you end up doing?
So we borrowed some money from some friends.
Oh, okay.
Those who could give us. So then we went to, then there was just one day left. My sister took me out for my birthday. She treated me. And the next day, because I had my flight already booked, I didn't have to pay. Just I needed some money for the taxi. But then ATMs in Kashmir were working.
They were okay?
They were okay. They were cashing those ATMs.
That's surprising. Okay.
That was surprising. So there were no queues or anything. I was comfortably, I could take out money and there were these papers here in India, they were publishing this demonetization has reduced stone pelting in Kashmir and all of that bullshit, which was just stories they were cooking. Nothing had changed really in Kashmir.
Really? Okay. So it's actually better to be there.
I was it was good for me to be there. And it was a good experience. I was there for some time. I don't exactly remember for how long I was there. But I stayed there for 3 months at least.
Oh, yeah?
November, December, January, February.
3 months?
Till February. Okay. I was there. Till February I was there.
And were you doing similar things? Like getting an apartment again, and talking to people?
Again, I got an apartment, lived there.
Yeah.
I was just reading, writing, traveling, meeting people, just being there. I was thinking and it was really cold.
Oh, I can imagine.
That's when during this visit, this thing happened. the landlord thing and the litter thing happened during this visit.
Oh, it was your second time.
It did not happen during my first visit.
I see.
So actually, I had gone to the same place, same building, another apartment, and I was living in the same same building during my second trip to Kashmir. And which month was it? It was February when it happened.
Okay.
16th or 17th February.
Yeah.
Or maybe 15th.
And that's when you got kicked out.
Yeah, I was kicked out. And then I was like really sad. And that's when I, you know, just laughed. And then again, I went back after some time.
Really? So you really liked Kashmir? Right?
Yes. Hmm. And then in 2017 September, I finally decided to, you know, come back to Delhi, get a job, and started working, living the normal life again.
So you've got full-time employment now.
Yeah, but I'm not sure for how long I'm going to do it, because, you know, it keeps you here in Delhi, and doesn't, like, though this job allows me a lot of travel, they pay for my travel, so I'm happy working with them, but then I'm not sure, I don't know for how long I'll be doing the same thing.
And you tell me you're writing for a specific publication.
Yeah, now because I'm working on roles with them, so yes, I'm writing for this organization.
What's the name of it?
Satyagraha.
Oh, but it's all in Hindi though, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So there we have English concern as well, but I don't write for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what I remember you telling me about the advantages of writing in Hindi versus English. Can you explain that?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
So because I come from so my education has been in English throughout. So I have studied Hindi as a language till my 12th standard, till my schooling. So I later all the medium of instruction and was in English only. But the thing is, when I started working as a journalist, so there's this clear distinction here in like India that most of the good journalists are, or reputed journalists are from English. So they are writing in English a lot, and plus this, I realized this more when I was working in Kashmir, when I was in Kashmir. So because Kashmiris do not know Hindi, most Kashmiris do not write Hindi.
Oh, you said the script is different. So even though they can speak more or less.
So they can speak, but they cannot write. Most of them do not write. So they either write Urdu or English. Or the Kashmiri language is again, the script is same as Urdu. So they cannot write in Hindi. So what I realized, so the reports that we see in Hindi journalism, the reports about Kashmir are limited to what was just happening. Okay, two people died there, some attack there, and this happened there, just that. No detailed reports, no real ground zero reports were there in Hindi and are there in Hindi. So I saw it as an opportunity because I could write in that language. I was on the ground. So I thought, you know, and yes, another reason. So, and you know, Kashmir has been used in Indian politics like very emotionally.
Sure.
So, you know, Pakistan and Kashmir are very important for Indian politics. And so this Hindi speaking belt, Uttar Pradesh, Bihar, Madhya Pradesh, and even Haryana and Rajasthan, these are the states, the Hindi speaking states.
Yeah.
And even Uttarakhand, Jammu. So
Jammu all these, speaks Hindi.
Jammu, like Jammu and Kashmir. So Kashmir, Kashmiris do not really read and they study Hindi. Jammu people do read Hindi and they study Hindi.
Yeah.
So it's a Muslim, a Hindu majority area. So these areas are pretty much sensitive about Jammu and Kashmir, and they get to majority of these places, these areas, is they read Hindi and they prefer to read Hindi newspapers, and they hardly get to know reality of Kashmir. So I thought of taking it as an opportunity, and I started writing for Hindi media houses. So that my reports, my ground reports, can reach out to more Hindi speaking people. So that they can know about Kashmir, like, at length, what their people are like, what their aspirations are like. So that's how I started writing in Hindi.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I get the feeling that even within India, so little is known about Kashmir. So it's great that you're trying to spread it around a bit more.
I don't know, because after I have joined this organization, I have not been to Kashmir after that.
Right.
Yeah, so This is one thing I miss here.
Do you think you'll go back?
I want to.
Yeah? Well, maybe your company can pay you.
Yeah, they would allow me to go. I went to Jammu, though. Uh-huh. Recently, I did a detailed report on Jammu.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because I had not explored Jammu while I was in... Yeah, there's one more thing I would like to share here.
Sure, yeah.
So, Jammu and Kashmir itself is divided in three parts. Okay, here is this valley, Kashmir Valley, yeah. which is populated by Kashmiris. And they are people from a different ethnicity, Kashmiri ethnicity. They think they are superior and yeah. Yeah. So, that's there. So, this like... And they were like mixed population, Hindu and Muslim. Uh-huh. Kashmiri Pandits, Kashmiri Hindus, and Kashmiri Muslims. Kashmiri Hindus were minority, and there was this major exodus of Kashmiri Hindus during 90s, like 89.
Oh, they went to other parts of India?
Yeah, so okay. Most of them came to Jammu and then other parts of India and other parts of this world. Uh-huh. They went to, because they came from a, they were the landowners and the educated class, they were in government services. Mm. And they were the minority, so they had to leave their homeland.
Okay.
So these people are, but they share the same ethnicity, just the religion is different. Kashmiris.
Okay.
And they are the inhabitants of this valley, Kashmir Valley. Uh-huh. But that's not all about Jammu and Kashmir. So there are two more regions. One is Jammu region and yeah. one is Leh Ladakh.
Uh-huh.
Ladakh, they are Buddhist. And they have their different ethnicity. They're Ladakhi people, little Mongoloid feature, and
yeah, yeah.
They are different.
I've been there too. And, yeah, so you know, they look completely different.
Yeah, they are different.
And
again, in Jammu, they are Dogras mostly, and Gujars. Dogras and Gujars.
What's that ethnicity?
Yeah, so they are much closer to Punjabis and okay. Sikhs, and then there are nomads. These nomads called Gujars. So they are everywhere. Gujars are almost everywhere because these they rear cattle, they're nomads, they just walk around, okay. They go up the mountains during summers and come back and settle in the plains during winters.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So this is this community. So Kashmir's politics is really complicated.
It sounds
and
like
I
it.
Could not understand it while I was in living in the valley. So yeah. Later now, while I'm working with this organization, now I've started taking interest in other parts of Kashmir, okay. Jammu and Kashmir.
Yeah.
So there is a lot to know about Jammu and Kashmir.
Yeah, I've seen your bookshelf. You've got like so many books about Kashmir.
Yeah, I'm trying to know and understand because it matters to, you know, Indians, to Pakistanis, to...
It's an important part of the world. I mean, even it's in the American news fairly frequently too.
Yeah.
Just this little part of the world, but
NYT talks a lot about Kashmir.
Yeah, okay.
And NYT has this New York Times has this editor, op-ed editor.
Uh-huh.
So this one, Basharat Peer, he's a Kashmiri.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
And his book called what's the name? Curfewed Night. It's a very popular book about Kashmir.
Oh, okay. I'll look into it. Mm. Cool. So right now, if someone wants to go to Kashmir, non-Indian, someone from outside of India, would you recommend that they go there now?
I would always recommend people to go to Kashmir.
Yeah, all right. It's one of those places you just say the name that, oh, I'm going to Kashmir to somebody if they haven't been there. And they go, ooh, you want to go there?
Same here as in India. I mean, they were like, how was it for you? Was it really difficult for you? Come on, reporting is always difficult. If you take any place, it's usually difficult. Might be a little more difficult in Kashmir because there are certain things involved. There are agencies, there are people, and obviously people are being killed there by militants, by governments, by I don't know who.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's difficult, but I really love that place.
Yeah. And if you go as a tourist, you'd be largely not involved in
you would not
this,
understand
right?
much about it. You just go, enjoy the beauty, enjoy people, enjoy food, culture, just come back.
Sure. All right. Yeah. Good advice. I certainly enjoyed it, and obviously I enjoy all of India, but that's just like one more part that it's another piece of the pie, if you will, like the puzzle of what is India.
Yeah.
I guess I've spent about 3 months so far in India. It just feels like I'm just getting started.
Yeah. I'm sure you would love to come back here again.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, there's huge areas that I want to go to still, like Punjab, Rajasthan, the East. Yeah, a lot of it.
I wish you good health and long life.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Same to you. And thanks. We've got a couple hours left before we catch this flight. And
yeah.
I think we're going to have a American chili dinner.
Yeah, your wife is making it for us.
Yeah, she's probably getting close to done, so we should go.
Let's see and if we can help her.
Thanks once again to Pradipika for that wonderful conversation, and thank you for listening. For more information about some of the places we talked about and a bunch of pictures of mine from Kashmir, you can go to my website, 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. Thanks once again, and I'll catch you next time.